Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hub Arkush of Shaw Media and Pro Football Weekly and the 670 The Score senior Bears expert on Twitter at Hub_Arkush joins the Bernstein and McKnight show. Was it as bad as I thought, Hub?
Well, no, I don't think it was awful. I mean, it wasn't good. It was certainly a wake-up call. The Bengals are not a very good football team. The Bengals also have a new offensive coordinator and a new offense, so there was a lot of apples to apples out there. And obviously they were a better football team when their first and second strings were on the field. Now, that doesn't mean they're more talented. I think you can find a few things in there with the Bears that you can feel okay about. But I thought it was kind of a wake-up call, almost a shot across the bow. Okay, there's a bunch of stuff you guys got to focus on the next 3 weeks. And the timing's good, meaningless exhibition game. But last night was disappointing.
Blocking and tackling is something that these guys are always going to work on, whether it's good or bad. Coaches are going to find coaching points. I'm more concerned, or I guess interested, in where the X's and O's. Like, what do we learn? What do we see about this offense, if anything? I thought I saw a couple of things that Matt Nagy's offense is going to try and do. Trey Burton was in motion a bunch. I wonder what you saw, and whether or not when Chase Daniel was out there, we saw a little bit more of how this offense may want to function.
Well, yes and no, Connor. I mean, the bottom line is that there's no game planning going on. They don't scheme to accomplish anything in particular. Matt Nagy at this point is talking about concepts where he might string a few plays together to see how they work and how the defense reacts to them. But I wouldn't try and read too much into what the Bears offense is going to look like really until week two, week three of the regular season. But minimally, at least till you get to, normally it's the third exhibition game. It's going to be the fourth this year for the Bears. Although, who knows, maybe they'll show a little bit more than others might next week in Denver. I think the best you're going to get out of these games is seeing how individual players, to Dan's point, at the top half of your roster are reacting to what it is they're being asked to do. And that wasn't so good last night. I think on the opening play, it's really excited to see Kevin White beat his guy like a drum, because he did. He had a step and a half on him, and Trubisky didn't get close to him. Now, the quarterbacks are going to miss throws once in a while. It's just that would have been a big deal if he could have hit White on that play. And then they come back three plays later, and he throws a really nice 11-yard curl, and White just flat-out drops it, horrible combination there. Some of the interior line blocking I thought was really disappointing, and that's a big concern as to what's going to happen at that left guard position. You look around on defense, and to me, it's not so much the missed tackles as who was missing them. Again, I don't know that you're set at safety. I think one thing that was really obvious out there, and I'm stuck on this one because I tap danced around it for 3 weeks and I can't tap dance around it any longer. The holdout is Roquan Smith's agent's fault, and therefore it's his fault. I mean, once you put all the evidence that we have together that we think we know, that's the bottom line. And now it's time for this kid to get in there. And I don't fault the Bears, and I don't think the Bears should cave. That said, John Timo can't be on the field when the other team's first and second string is. That's a problem, okay? And obviously you got to get Danny Trevathan out there too. So, it's just a bunch of, kind of one-off observations that popped out of that exhibition game.
Why shouldn't the Bears cave on this if four other teams already have? It's not really a precedent at this point.
Well, because 27 other teams haven't, and there's a reason. And it's anecdotal that four teams have. I don't think anybody has actually seen the alleged four contracts that we're talking about. That's the perception we all have. It's an unreasonable ask, Dan. And at the end of the day, if the Bears cave on it, is it going to ruin the organization? No, probably not. But it does send a message that the Bears will cave. And that's why they shouldn't do it, because it's not a reasonable request. It's very frustrating to me because it's not being done in the best interest of either the player or the team. It's being done in the best interest of the agents, and they're not supposed to be part of this story. They're supposed to be, guiding the player. So I feel bad for both sides, but Smith, to me, is the one with the power to do something about it.
If that's the case, then is it a relationship that he's got to have with coaches, with advisors, not CAA, that he just decides, let's go play football?
No, Connor, I mean, CAA isn't going anywhere. They had 7 of the top 10 picks. They're going to be around. Everybody's got to deal with everybody. But I think, unfortunately, the Bears have been chosen as a team with a chance to teach them a message, and you're not writing the rules here. From Roquan Smith's perspective, it's always been simple. I mean, this is what they're telling him. He says, I'm paying him a lot, and he is paying him a lot of money. You know, they're probably getting, I don't know what their fee is, but it's probably minimally, it's in the 3 to 5% range of a $20 million deal. And for that money, you know, it's usually wise to listen to your advisors. But in this case, they're steering him wrong, you know. And I don't know. I don't know a lot about his family background. I think it's a pretty solid family background. He seems like a really bright kid. And so I just think it's time to be a man and say, hey, what's in my best interest? What's in my new team's best interest?
What does Marcus Cooper do for a living?
He's making a lot of money right now to try and play football. Actually, that's not fair. He's not. He doesn't start getting paid until he makes the team. I don't know. I don't know what's going on there, because this kid has had some really good NFL games. Had a really good season in Arizona before he came here. Had a decent year in Kansas City before he bounced around a little bit. And yet there's a reason that he's bounced. I think the Bears' third or fourth team. But he was struggling out there early last night. No question about that. Now, again, you're talking about A.J. Green on the one play. He's going to make a lot of people struggle. But as well as the young corners are playing right now in camp, not so much last night, I think that Cooper's probably a long shot to be on the final roster.
I actually liked some of the quick twitch that I saw from Leonard Floyd. You didn't see impactful playmaking, but I was just watching a guy who's coming back from a knee injury. It looks like I can have pretty fair expectations that he's at a minimum going to be a full-speed player right now.
Yeah, I think the best way to put this, Dan, this is why we have to be so careful with these exhibition games. As I said, there was some good stuff out there, you know, stuff you want to see. And the way I would describe it is I thought that Leonard Floyd in particular, but I would also add in Adam Shaheen. I would say that the tackles, Massey and Leno, and I worry a lot about Leno, I would put in this category. And probably Kevin White, even if not for the drop, he was running around. Those guys all look to be doing some of the things you want to see him do. I can't get over White dropping that one pass, but he did stay on the field longer than most guys who are going to be on the team, and he did constantly keep showing up in the middle frame, which meant he was part of the action. So there was some good stuff out there, but you're right. Yeah, Floyd was making a difference. He was generating pressure, and he wasn't getting much help out there. Now, again, the Bengals were arguably the worst offensive line in football last year. And so you come off an 8-sack performance against the Ravens to 1 last night, and you worry a little bit about what happened during the week. But so much of it is just practice and how they're approaching it. You got to be careful in, you know, trying to come to any final conclusions from that.
I wanted to ask you about Adam Shaheen, because you saw him with the 3 catches and 53 yards. You saw him get loose a little bit down a sideline. You saw a little bit of the speed. The Bears made moves at that position, though, that tight end spot. Well, not that they've got just the one, but there are a couple of guys vying for action there. How does Shaheen have to improve most? Like, in what one area does he have to improve most for this offense, in your opinion, Hub?
Probably his blocking, Connor, because he is a much better receiver than blocker, or at least was coming out of college, for obvious reasons. They said that they were happy with the way his blocking improved last year, but what's interesting, you're correct when you say they made moves, but what they've got now is 3 tight ends and Deion Sims, who's not a great receiver, Trey Burton, who's not a factor blocking, and Shaheen appearing to be the one guy who can do both. And so the goal would be for his blocking to be good enough that Shaheen can be on the field all the time, and then when they want to go 2 tight end and run the ball, it's going to be, for the most part, Sims out there, and an obvious passing situation is going to be Burton out there. But Shaheen is the one of the 3 that gives them the flexibility to do whatever they want if he, you know, fulfills his potential. And what I thought was kind of fun to see last night is, you know, there's no question about his size and that he's a pretty good athlete and a pretty good receiver. But going all the way back to the draft, you know, when you look at his measurables, they were unique triangle number side speed ratio for Division III football, you know, and they were pretty good for FBS football. but they didn't make him. They don't make him unique in the NFL. He doesn't have unique speed for an NFL tight end. He doesn't have the best athleticism we've ever seen. He's just a really nice complete package. And the analogy I've always looked at, or the comparison I've always gone for, the comp, a guy like Heath Miller. You know, Jason Witten is that style. Now Jason Witten's going to be a Hall of Famer. I'm not saying he's got to be a Hall of Famer, but he's not going to be. You know, you didn't draft him to be one of these 80 catch, 1100 yard tight ends. He's got a chance to be the complete package, occasionally split a seam, but really be a big factor in the red zone and on third down.
One guy I want to ask you about who I thought we might have talked about more this year based on what was said about him last year and certainly looking at him is Roy Robertson-Harris, who has been grown into almost an ideal prototype of a 3-4 defensive end, the 5 technique, who at 6'6 and 300 pounds can stand there and stare a tackle in the eye and line up over him. Yet, you know, there is in the game at the very, very end, what's his progress been like, and what do you think the new coaching staff, and I know the defensive staff is the same, but does a new head coach perhaps feel the same way about where his arrows pointed as the old ones did?
He is somebody who I know that they're focused on. I think they're pleased with his progress. He definitely has made progress. We have to remember that as an undrafted rookie free agent out of UTEP, I believe it was, this is a stand-up outside pass rushing linebacker who they've literally added about 30 to 35 pounds of bulk. And so he's not only learning to play a new position, but learning to do it with his new body. And he has shown some flashes of doing some really special things because he is an incredible athlete for his size. He was very active yesterday, but this gets back to in these games, you got to see who these guys are active against. And he started to dominate once the third and fourth stringers were on the field for the most part. He has been in the rotation with the starters. He's been out there with the big guys. He does appear to belong, and he's somebody that I think that the arrow is, they think his arrow is definitely pointing up. Now, one thing that we've seen in this relationship, though, between Matt Nagy and Vic Fangio is I think it's pretty clear this is going to be Vic's call. It's not like, you know, Nagy's going to come in and say, oh, you missed on this guy, I want him on the field. He is, I think, about as genuine as he can be when he tells us that he's letting Vic run the show on defense. So I don't think, and the entire, basically the entire defensive coaching staff is the same. So I don't think there's any real change there.
Hub, you and I were doing a couple of shows right before the NFL draft and after the Bears had signed Kyle Fuller to his deal. So we were, you know, you and I mostly focused on the draft at that point. I wonder what you'd heard and how you feel about Amu Kamara and about Kyle Fuller. Fuller had the pick and was scored on yesterday. Not so much necessarily in yesterday's game because the film is what it is, but how have you heard, you know, the conversation go? What have you seen from those two out of camp?
The two best players in camp, Connor. You know, some of the debate is which one's better, I think. And the real surprise is that I think the strong majority will tell you that Prince Amu Kamara has probably been the most consistent performer in Bourbonnais. You know, you're talking about, I think it's a 9-year vet, either an 8 or a 9-year vet on his third team, who always had a rep, of being a really good cover guy, but not great ball skills and not very physical. Well, he has found his ball skills. He's intercepting passes every day in Bourbonnais, and he has gotten more physical. He's never going to be the most physical guy. Fuller should have gone to the Pro Bowl last year, but there's always a couple extra guys at each position who should go, so this is not a conspiracy theory thing. He just didn't happen for him, but now with so many people realizing how close he was last year, if he is as good or better this year, he is going to be a Pro Bowler the next couple of years. That's how well he's playing. So it's really interesting that right now, and you don't expect this in a Vic Fangio defense, but you'd have to argue the strength of the Bears defense is their cornerbacks, because you've also got Bryce Callahan and Craven LeBlanc both having really good camps fighting for that nickel spot. We just mentioned a guy like Marcus Cooper, who you would think is a veteran that they did bring back and didn't have to, that would be a lock for the roster. I don't think so, because once you get past Callahan and Craven LeBlanc, you've got these kids like Doran Grant, you know, who's having a good camp. There's some of these young corners that they like. So the secondary is loaded. When you talk about upgrading the talent on the roster, the secondary, there's plenty of talent there. Now, I'm still worried about that other safety spot next to Eddie Jackson, who I think is going to be a star. You know, that was my buddy Adrian Amos, who missed that tackle on Joe Mixon. You know, and it's going to happen. I mean, you're going to miss tackles, but just kind of the way he played it, the angle he took, the way he missed it was reminiscent of some of the struggles he's had earlier. So other than possibly But the depth at safety is better than it's been. DeAndre Hall is back there playing well now. Deion Bush has flashed occasionally. You got Houston Carson. So the secondary looks really strong, and particularly the two corners you talked about are having an excellent preseason.
Hub, you mentioned Cravon LeBlanc, and the Bears discovered him when he was still on the Patriots during training camp when they got together and they had some practices against the Patriots. They're going to do that this week as they lead up to Thursday night's game with the Denver Broncos, and they always love this idea, these sort of these conferences where they get together and they get to see other people and other schemes, and you get to get out of your comfort zone a little bit and practice against them. What do you expect? What is the significance of this next game, simply because they're also going to get in this extra work?
Dan, I think the practices are more important than the game, and to prove to you that I'm not blowing smoke, I'll be out in Denver with them for the practices, but I'm not staying for the game. So, and that's only because it's a long, expensive preseason trip, and you know what budgets are. But I'm looking forward to I guess the practices are actually Wednesday and Thursday. I think it's something that Trubisky needs badly, because now, you know, you can talk about first offense, first defense, and talking smack, and, you know, the camaraderie and the rivalry and everything that goes on. You never go 100% live in training camp. They won't in Denver, but you do go a little bit harder when it's against another team, and you do get a better effort when it's against another team. And so I think it's time. I think what we learned last night is that all the feel-good stuff is good and you want to continue, but they do have work to do, and they're going to get better work this week. So I don't think it's so much that they're going to find another gem they can pluck off the Broncos roster as it is they're going to get a better read on their own guys who, whether it's subconscious or intentional, are going to be working and practicing even a little bit harder than they have been. And in particular, I think the guy who needs it is Trubisky. I think Chase Daniel is fine. You know, he's come in a couple times, so you're solid at backup. But
Tyler Bray sucks.
That's where I was going. God forbid God. Tyler Bray has to play in a regular season game. I don't understand. I know he knows the offense, and I know he's a Matt Nagy guy, and I know he's got the NFL body. But he is awful, you know, and so I'm not sure. They have carried three in Kansas City. It looks like they're going to carry three here. But, you know, obviously it's secondary conversation. If we're worried week six, week seven, week eight about whether it's Tyler Bray or Chase Daniel, the season's over anyway. This is about Mitch Trubisky, and I think more than anything for him to get this work against the Denver first-string defense is going to be really good for the team this week.
Hub, thanks as always. Have a great weekend.
All right, guys, take care.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.